The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Okay, welcome back. It is hard to talk about the field of ufology or the hobby or profession of researching unidentified flying objects without running into one man, and one man in particular, very, very early on. His name, of course, is Stanton Friedman. He is the dean of all UFO researchers. He has been at it a long time. He is revered and respected and looked up to around the world, and has been around the world many times speaking to people. I have no idea how many colleges and universities and other venues he has occupied and delivered his messages, most prominent of which, of course, is flying saucers are real. He's an extraordinary man, and I count him as a friend. He's been on this program for very nearly 20 years now. We start our 20th year on the 24th of June, and we get to spend the first hour with Stan Friedman tonight. Hello, Stan. Welcome back.
Good evening. Glad to be back. And it's over 700 colleges, and
See?
It's been 50 states, 10 provinces, and 18 other countries. I get around.
700. Wow. I would never have, I would have guessed 400, something like that. That's a lot. And you gave your first lecture when, Stan?
1967.
That's 45 years ago. 46 years ago.
Well, I'm sorry, but that's the way it is.
No, you're forgiven. It's okay. 700 colleges. God only knows how many radio programs, how many TV programs, how many documentaries.
I don't keep track.
No. Well, like I say, no one can really go into this field without running into your name in the first or second
sentence. Don't forget the five books.
No, I was getting there. I'm getting there. And you've got DVDs out, too. So
yes.
It's all there. I remember some of the stories that we talked about years and years ago, and you wouldn't remember them. There were too many of them. But let's do this for fun. Since you got into this in 1967, and you were really the man who brought Roswell out of the shadows. Well, heck, it didn't exist until you brought it forward. It really didn't. You were the guy. How much progress have you, and by virtue of your efforts and your hard work and your dedication, have we, those who care about this field, made in 48 years? How much have we advanced?
You know, it depends on who's doing the looking. If you ask the nasty, noisy negativists, they'll tell you, well, there isn't any progress. There still is no evidence. There's nothing to it. It's all a figment of the imagination, et cetera, ad nauseum.
Yeah.
That's if you ask them. In the real world of looking at evidence, data, so forth, actually we've made quite a lot of progress. Now, it would be nice if we were aided by the print media, you know, the New York Times, Washington Post.
Just a little help here and there, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, some of the, one of the peculiar things that turns up, there is a PhD thesis about press coverage of flying saucers.
Oh, is there?
Yeah, there's a dozen, well, at least a dozen PhD theses I haven't checked very recently. But,
yeah.
And it was a guy who went on to become the head of journalism at Drake University in Iowa. And he had some strong remarks to make about the inadequacy of the press coverage, the failure to deal with the appropriate people to gather the appropriate evidence. And he read, it's hard to believe, 10,000 clippings, and I feel for anybody who had to do that. But it really is, just to throw one example at you, back in 1952, it was admitted that, with names attached from Air Force people, that orders had been issued to shoot down UFOs if they don't land when instructed to do so.
That's hard to believe for some people, but
several papers covered that.
Oh, yes.
But here's the strange thing, including the Louisville Courier-Journal, which was Pulitzer's paper, you know, and stuff like that. But neither the New York Times nor the Washington Post mentioned that. You'd think it would be important, and also an Air Force general saying, Roger Ramey, as a matter of fact, who was directly involved with Roger.
Really? Ramey again?
Before.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, well, he'd had a promotion.
Funniest thing.
he stated, we've scrambled more than 300 times. Just routine. But, so why didn't the Washington Post and the New York Times cover that story? This was in 52, which was the biggest year in Project Blue Book's history.
Well, talk about national defense. We're at war in Korea. This is an enormous subject. This had been, of course, a hot topic in the media. This is before the lid came down on it all. And you're darn right, it ought to have been headline story. Absolutely.
Yeah, now, there's another story that really only one guy, I don't know if you've had him on or not, Frank Fascino.
Oh, I've had Frank on a number of times, and his book, Shoot Them Down, is a really important book.
I wrote the foreword for it.
Yes, sir.
And Frank and I had talked about this. People got upset when his first version said that there had been dogfights between UFOs and jet aircraft and so forth. So he did some homework. I had checked, and it turns out the New York Times does list crashes of airplanes, military planes, one at a time, you know. And in a five-year period, there were over 200 military planes. Crashes, fatal ones.
That's right.
The pilot
we lost a lot of folks. Yep.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, not funny, but five of those 200 were pilots who had done more than 100 missions in Korea where they were being shot at by MiGs. And the MiG wasn't a bad airplane.
They knew exactly what they were doing. They were the best of the best.
If anybody survived 100 missions in Korea, he was a good pilot, darn it. And, you know, that doesn't happen by accident.
And we didn't have
so
any
how
better.
Come they come back to the United States where there are no MiGs and crash? And the, even the New York Times, they have an index. That's why it's easier to check these things. The New York Times used terms like disintegrated and disappeared. That's strange. Wording for a fatal military plane crash.
Not too many bailouts, were there?
No. Although, you know, I should mention something else here. People have said to me that, well, their families would have been told what happened. Not so.
Oh, not there, so at all.
No. There's a book, By Any Means Necessary, by Bill Burroughs, William Burroughs, who talks about 166 deceased Air Force crew members on reconnaissance planes that got shot down or disappeared or whatever over Korea or North Korea or over Russia or over China. This is in the early 50s. These were reconnaissance missions. These were planes that were loaded with electronics gear. Now, and there was radio communication, and their job was to head straight in toward the radar and see how quickly the radar sets came on and what frequency was used, so that in case of war, they would be able to jam it.
Right.
You know, a sensible military thing. Things were pretty hot back then. There wasn't one word in the public press, and the families were not notified of what happened to their sons, brothers, fathers, whatever. Unfortunate plane crash at sea, nobody's recovered. Until 2001, and most of these happened in the late 40s, early 50s, they set up a conference, the government did, and brought in the families of the crews and told them what happened to their family member and gave them the medals, the guys at award, so forth. Now, 166 guys, not one word in the press, and not one word to the families. So, obviously, it's important to the government that people not know what's going on sometimes. Now, admittedly, we shot down some Russian planes, too, you know, doing the same sort of things. But
yeah, exactly.
So governments do keep secrets, even when it's airplanes, you know, fresh, newly minted, important jet aircraft.
Yeah.
And nobody gets told. So, you know, this is all wrapped up, this question of secrecy. And I want to throw in one comment here. General Carol Bolander was asked, what should we do about Project Blue Book? This is after the Condon Report came out. And he wrote a memo in which he said it should be canceled, and I agreed with that. But he said, reports of UFOs which could affect national security are made in accordance with JNAP 146 and Air Force Manual 55-11 and are not part of the Blue Book system. Mm-hmm. I located him 10 years later, and I talked to him, and he agreed with me when I said, it sounds like there are two different reporting systems for the stuff that affects national security and everything else.
You bet.
And he agreed. He agreed. Mm-hmm. No major media group, as far as I know, has ever covered that statement, but it makes a lie of almost everything the Air Force has said since 1969.
Because
they always said, we're not doing anything more.
Yeah.
No national security considerations with UFOs. It was a lie. Flat out lie.
Big lie. All right. Hold on. We'll come right back in just a couple with Stan Friedman. Okay, back with Stan. The big years were 52, 53, 54, right in there, when for some reason the Air Force decided to declare unidentified flying objects as hostiles and shoot them down. The title of Frank Frischino's book, foreword by Stan Friedman. This is a very, very well-documented book. It's not based on hearsay, any kind of anecdotal database. It's facts. Frank spent many, many years on this. It brings history alive, and as you've heard some of the data recited by Stan, we lost a lot of aircraft here at home and hundreds of aviators, and some of these guys were as good as we had. There weren't any bailouts to speak of. There may have been a few, but these planes fell out of the sky or fell out of the sky in pieces, as in they had been disintegrated by something. This is not a joke, and it is real. The Air Force stopped its policy. And remember, none of this, as Stan said, was in any of the newspapers. And we stopped losing air crews. It was that simple. We took gun cameras up instead of loaded guns. And they, whoever they are, knew it. And so it became an issue of watch and record. I do believe at some point in time, the Air Force realized they learned their lesson that there was nothing we could do about this. We might as well just ignore it. So that was part of the bulwark of the official lie that there's nothing going on up there. And it's continued pretty much to this day. Go ahead, Stan.
No, it's one of those mysteries of why the media hasn't covered this adequately. I mean, why is Monica Lewinsky, everybody remembers her.
Well, she's an alien, isn't she? there's ever an ET, there it is.
In other words, the media have chosen not to cover it. And I'm reminded of the fact that President Kennedy wished after the Bay of Pigs fiasco that the New York Times, which knew about the coming invasion but chose to not reveal it at the request of the government, why people don't understand that censorship has gone on. And Kennedy expressed the view that he wished they had said something, because then maybe he wouldn't have gone ahead and we would have avoided the fiasco. So
right.
People may also not realize that within 2 weeks of the beginning of World War II, a director of censorship was appointed. And there was agreement not to talk about certain things. I mean, you can understand troop movements, ship sailing, stuff like that. But it went well beyond that. One thing, just to pick one at random almost, was the flights of Fugo balloons that the Japanese had launched from out in the Pacific. They were rigged so that hopefully they would set fires in forests, kill people, go down, you know, the westerly winds prevail, and so you go from where you guys are further east. And it was stated that no information, no results of those Fugo balloon launches was to be reported anywhere, anytime, so the Japanese wouldn't know whether they were successful or not. And there was an agreement. There was also, you could not use the word uranium, which didn't mean anything to anybody back then, except spies, of course.
Yeah.
Stan,
excuse me, one thing about the newspapers, you make the point that why did they choose not to report these things? And then you mentioned some of the, not quite majors, but, you know, substantial newspapers. I would suggest that there might be some merit, and you've done this, looked into Operation Northwoods, where the CIA bragged in the 1950s that within literally 1 hour they could call any major newspaper in this country and have any story they wanted put on that paper and published.
Wow.
So it would be certainly not outside the realm of possibility that they could have simply instructed the major papers, we don't touch these stories, kind of a philosophy that extends to this day. Look what happened at Chicago's O'Hare Airport. Months went by before that issue came to the public eye, and it was only because of Peter Davenport on this program that the Chicago Trib or the Times, I forgot which one, finally had to cover the thing. Anyway, I think those papers were just told to shut up, frankly. That would be the easy answer.
Well, I think so, but most Americans aren't aware of how much the media have been complicit in the cover-up.
Oh, yeah.
The Cosmic Watergate, as I call it.
That was a wonderful title for a book, too. Yeah.
Yeah. I've been using it a long time, but I don't have a book by that title. Too bad.
No.
My books are listed at my website, www.stantonfriedman.com.
You finally... remember we used to fight about this? Will you please get a good URL, Stan? Please?
Well, you know, funny thing, it's like my email address, which is at the website. I tried 10 different things, and they were all taken.
Mm-hmm.
And so finally I picked something that I think nobody else would be crazy enough to use. FSPHYS.
See? Nobody would be crazy enough to use
com.
It. And no,
it means
that,
something.
No one can, but no one can memorize it. All right, you're safe.
Well, but I needed to be able to know what it was.
Okay.
It's Flying Saucer Physicist. FS for Flying Saucer. PHYS for Physicist.
Now I can remember that.
Remember.
Now that you explain it, I can remember it.
All right. So it's legitimate. But
FS
you know, it's been a busy time for ufology in its own peculiar way. Everything's sort of pending. My latest column in the MUFON Journal talks about what happened in Washington, D.C. at the end of April, beginning of May, with the hearings, the Citizens Hearings on Disclosure, CHD. And, you know, it's kind of hard to imagine some rich guy, and I honestly don't know who it was, gave Steve Bass of Paradigm Research a lot of money, upwards of $500,000 on
hold,
to set up this effort in which five former congressmen sat as a kind of panel in a simulated congressional hearing to which 30 or 40 of us, I don't know what the final number was, testified. And there were rules of behavior, if you will, and what you could talk about and all that sort of thing. And this was in Washington for a full week. And those guys got paid $20,000 each.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that's bad. I'm just saying the contributors, did not get paid. Expenses, yes, of course. But the question is what good will come out of it. And I don't have an answer for that yet. The people were very impressed, I think, the Congress people, former Congress people, were very impressed by the testimony of former military people and some foreigners as well. So, it's interesting to dig into it.
It was an extraordinary event, really, and should have been covered in the mainstream media much better than it was. I'm running Paul Hellyer's little snippet. I've run a number of them in video format. So there you go. I mean, if you folks have interest in this field, Paul Hellyer, the former Canadian Minister of Defense, all right, like our Secretary of Defense, same thing.
Yeah.
Has a lot to say about this and did it at that press conference or hearing, and he's also done it on this program in the past. Hold on a second, Stan. We have to pause again. We'll come right back.
Yep.
Stanton Friedman, and his website is right there. Click on his name. His email address is easyfspys. FSphys, flying saucer physicist. You could have picked flying saucer Stan. I mean, that would have worked. I bet that's not taken. Anyway, you got it.
Probably not. This one's easy for me to remember.
It's a good one. All right. Hold on a second. We'll come right back. Okay, talking to Stan about the state of affairs of those things flying around up there. There seem to be more of them than ever, but we'll get to that in a minute. What was the net gain of the hearings? They were very well done, conducted with dignity, perhaps more dignity than many regular hearings in the Congress. And
I'm waiting, really. They're making a movie out of the whole thing. And it's supposed to be distributed in several languages and to be shown in other places. And
well, it's kind of a disclosure project part two, but that's fine. That's fine.
Well, yeah, and I should make clear here now that we didn't all have the same opinion about all this stuff, all those who were testifying. And I, for one, am not in favor, believe it or not, of full disclosure of everything we have learned. And people say, why not? Aren't we entitled to know everything? I worked under security for 14 years. I do not believe we are entitled to know everything. In particular, and this was the focus of one of the presentations, and I disagree with it, they say, we have learned how to make free energy. And the only reason, this is Steve Gerr stuff, the only reason it's not being put out there is that there is hundreds of trillions of dollars to be made by greedy capitalists who keep you burning oil and gas and coal and, you know, and all this sort of stuff. And the only trouble is nobody's ever produced this free energy. And in a movie that was shown, they did light a light bulb, a tiny little light bulb, with the energy of the vacuum, zero-point energy. That's a long way from producing the energy the world needs. But my objection to releasing everything, how can the United States or Russia or China even, in good conscience, release their information that they may have learned from the equivalent of a Roswell if the other two countries don't? Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it's called quid pro quo.
Yeah, I mean, if the United States should put its data out on the table, even if nobody else does, that's ridiculous. The Russian atomic bomb program was made at least a year shorter because of spies. And suppose we have developed a better means of detecting craft moving in the atmosphere. Should we put that out on the table so somebody can beat it?
Uh-huh.
And like I say, it's the same for the Russians and the Chinese. They've got to be thinking, why should we put what we have learned out if those guys don't?
That's a good argument, Stan. No question.
You know, I mean, we live in a complicated world, and I am in favor of a careful effort to acquaint the world with the simple fact that the planet's being visited by intelligently controlled extraterrestrial spacecraft.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when you announce it, I think it should be done by a multinational group and with the statement that there will be international meetings held on the economic, the political,
sure,
the psychological,
course,
all these impacts. But man is at a new time in his history. We're part of a larger scheme of things, and finally our egos are being shown to be ridiculous. An important thing that's happened in the last few years is recognition that, there's more than one solar system out there. As a matter of fact, in our galaxy alone, it would appear that there are literally billions of other planets. Billions. And it doesn't take a large percentage of them to be occupied to say
right,
we're not alone, especially when you consider the age of the galaxy, the universe, whatever you want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So suddenly, instead of being the big shots, we're at the top of the heap, folks. Uh-oh, we're not. And there's an area that I've gotten into more recently. I'll probably be writing a long article about it, but about the refusal of the astronomical and SETI communities to get into the world of nuclear energy. I mean, that's another way in which the world has changed. We figured out how the stars work, nuclear fusion. What's so special? Well, every fusion reaction produces about 10 million times as much energy as a typical chemical reaction, like lighting a match or, you know, burning stuff. 10 million times. And you say, so what? Who cares? Well, the Navy, at least, the navies of the world, certainly not just the United States Navy, have learned that nuclear energy can be useful for propulsion systems, nuclear submarines,
sure,
nuclear aircraft carriers.
Well, I think the Navy is probably in the lead in that field.
Oh, I think so.
Yeah.
Yes, I worked on aircraft nuclear propulsion systems. As
yeah,
far as I know, we never flew a nuclear-powered aircraft. We operated jet engines on nuclear power. But when you look at fusion, I mean, let's face it, the world has moved nuclear for bombs.
Right.
You know, a 10-ton blockbuster and then an 18,000-ton atomic bomb, then a 10 million tons of TNT equivalent release in the first H bomb. 10 million tons of TNT, one bomb. And the Russians tested one that was 50 million tons of TNT equivalent. You
that
can
was
use
the big one.
Nuclear. Mm. Yeah, that was a real big one. If you did it in the middle of New Jersey, you would start fires from New York to Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
I know some people say that's not a bad idea, but anyway, we won't talk about that.
No, let's skip that.
But the point is, we and everybody else who's at least as advanced as we are will try to figure out how their star works, and all the stars in the universe operate on nuclear fusion. And if you're a smart guy, you figure out, I can use that for propulsion. I worked on a study program back in, 1962 on nuclear fusion propulsion. So from an alien viewpoint, these idiots on Earth, and I say that not laughingly, we Earthlings, Terrans, I guess the science fiction guys use that term, killed 50 million of our own kind in World War II. 50 million.
At least.
We destroyed 1,700 cities.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're not nice guys.
No.
People say, why don't they land on a White House lawn? It's a no-fly zone. They'll shoot at you first. You know, we're not friendly.
They've certainly flown right over it, as we know. And I had one of the radar operators on this program who was operating the radar. Yeah. Yeah, they were there, and they were all over the place. They simply, in many cases, I think, rather obviously, fly a little too quick for the human eye to easily lock onto and track it. It's not a mystery. And yes, there are things up there that are ours, probably quite a few of them. Our technology should not be counted out. I think we can do remarkable things. And the Navy, as Stan will be first to tell you, is in space in a very big way. In fact, space is their game. It's their big ocean. So they've been putting a lot in
there. Intelligence is their game, too. The Office of Naval Intelligence.
ONI.
Leading agency.
Yeah, it is. All right. Just a second, and we'll come right back. Hold on. Okay, and we're back. With the amount of conditioning, Stan, and I don't think for a moment that those wonderful sci-fi movies of the 1950s were entirely accidental. Mm-hmm. We do know the government, CIA, has a great influence in the entertainment media, certainly Hollywood, and it may be that they were attempting to prepare and condition the populace then for some kind of an announcement or an acceptance of the reality. They never got around to it. And so what's happened since then? Another 40-plus years of sci-fi movies. If we were ever ready to accept, I think a lot of people would just yawn and say, oh, well, so they're here, so what? They've been literally, what, 2.5 generations now imbued with this around the clock?
Well, I'm hoping that I will have a part of that action because two of my books, Flying Saucers, well, the Top Secret Magic, they're both about flying saucers, and captured the Betty and Barney Hill UFO experience with Kathleen Marden, Betty's niece, who just has a new book out, incidentally, about alien abductions. Two of the books have been optioned for movies.
Well, how nice.
Now, that doesn't mean the movies will be made.
I understand.
Yeah. Magic Men, the one about Top Secret Magic, the Majestic 12 documents,
sure,
has gone through, like, the screenplay has gone through 4 revisions.
Mm-hmm.
And there is excitement in Hollywood, the producer tells me. I've dealt with Hollywood before, and, you know, I hate to say this to somebody on the West Coast, but sometimes those guys don't go anywhere with projects.
Excitement comes and excitement goes in Hollywood.
Yeah. And I keep saying I want Richard Dreyfuss to play me in the movie.
What a good casting idea. Absolutely.
Well, you know, he was born in, of all years, 1947. Which seems appropriate somehow.
It's perfect.
The book was optioned with Don Schmidt and Tom Carey's book, Witness to Roswell. And so the idea is to make an exciting documentary. It's not a documentary. It'll be a thoughtful,
a period
movie.
Piece. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, going through the ups and downs of doing UFO research and the agreements and disagreements, and, you know, because we don't all agree on much.
And the frustrations and all the rest of it.
Yeah, all that sort of stuff. And so I'm hoping that I will live long enough to see one, maybe two of my books be turned into movies. But, you know, and I hate to admit this, Jeff, but more people go to the movies than read books, I think.
Well, it's a movie, and now a movie is an ordeal for some of them. They got about a 5 to 8 minute YouTube attention span, and that's about it for a lot of
folks. You're right. And people send me copies of stuff that's on YouTube, and I say, where'd you get that? it turns out it was made 20 years ago, and I don't know where they got a copy of it.
That's funny.
But anyway, what I'm hopeful is that the movies, you know, will be sort of a combination of JFK and All the President's Men. That's what Magic meant.
It could be a terrific film. I hope that somebody who catches the vision has the right connections and it gets done. This is good.
Yeah. I want to communicate. And yeah, I suppose there might be some money if they make it eventually. But, you know, I've spent an awful lot of my life working on this kind of stuff. And especially with regard to Majestic 12, as you know, that's controversial. Not everybody in ufology thinks that there are three legitimate MJ-12 documents. I think there are, and I think I've handled all the objections. And I'll tell you, one way to get a laugh at my lecture is I show a copy of a check from Philip J. Klass. You remember, Phil.
Oh, yes.
To me for $1,000 for proving him wrong.
Oh, he paid off.
Oh, he paid off. Yeah. Well, yeah, and he sort of kept that part out of the public eye.
Yeah, that was a real well-kept secret. Now, that's interesting.
Yeah, he challenged me on one of the documents because it was done, perhaps I hadn't noticed, he said, that it was done in the large pica type. But the National Security Council used the small elite type, and he had 9 documents to prove it. So he challenged me to find any other genuine documents, and they had a bunch of criteria, done in the same size and style type, and for each one, he would pay me $100 up to a maximum of 10, unfortunately. I'd have been a wealthy man. Well, he had never been, would you believe, he's making these claims, he'd never been to the Eisenhower Library. I've spent weeks there. And I was going there, and he gave me 60 days, so no sweat. Went there, pulled out 14 documents done in the same size and style, pica type, and I hope your audience all knows that there used to be typewriters around with different typefaces,
You do a search, you'll find them, folks, on the internet. That's about the only yeah. place you will.
And so I went to the Eisenhower Library. I pulled 14 documents. They're easy to spot because pica type is big. The elite type is small. And I sent him copies of the 14 and an invoice for $1,000 because he set the limit at 10. And he sent me a check. And would you believe he got madder than heck when I showed a copy of the check in something I wrote, the final report on Operation Majestic 12. And he threatened to sue me and all that sort of stuff. And I finally said, look, Phil, you sent me a check. I Xeroxed it. I gave the check to the bank. The bank cashed it. I can do whatever I darn please with the Xerox.
You bet.
But what's interesting is that Phil's papers at the American Philosophical Society Library in Philadelphia, and extensive papers, because they carried on a lot of correspondence. He was a very fast typist. There is no Friedman file there, even though we had loads of letters back and forth over a period of well over 20 years.
Hmm.
And when I called his wife, his widow, and asked if she knew any place that Phil's papers, any other place where some of his files might have gone, and she didn't. So I don't think he wanted anybody to see that he had paid.
Who was he working for? Obviously, an alphabet agency or some other arm of the establishment. That was his job.
If you look at his FBI file, which is on the internet, incidentally.
Yeah, everything is.
They were very upset with him, but they couldn't prosecute him. In a couple of cases, they felt he had leaked stuff, classified material, but if they prosecuted it, him, it would be calling attention to that material that it was real. But they had some strong things. He wrote a really nasty article about J. Allen Hynek, who had done I'll call it an article for the an FBI publication. And he said really nasty things about Allen. And the FBI responded by saying that his criticisms had no merit and so forth and so on. But they were caught in a situation, and I understand the situation, that where they couldn't prosecute him, but they didn't like him. Now, so I don't know who he was working for. Maybe just his ego, it's his way of being somebody.
Well, there's always that possibility, yeah.
Yeah, and what can I say about somebody who will explain away the Japan Airlines, case, as Jupiter?
No. I mean, JAL 007 passes and is passed by a 1 mile machine at altitude over Alaska. It's not Jupiter.
And it's seen on radar by the plane and on the ground.
Yeah, yeah.
Does that sound like Jupiter to you? It sure doesn't to me.
Well, Klass tipped his hand countless times as being obviously biased against reality, shall we say?
Yeah. And, you know, he's the kind of guy that got sneaky, too. We go into a television show in Detroit, I think it was, and they told us you can't bring anything in with you. So as soon as we get in the studio, he pulls a clipping out of his pocket. It was funny.
Oh, geez.
And now, for people who wonder about such things, I will point out that the media have the TV. We were on Nightline with Ted Koppel.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Before we go in, we were supposed to be talking about the government cover-up. So I brought some blacked-out documents and whited-out documents, you know. Oh, you can't bring those in. Why not? That's what we're talking about. Proof of the cover-up. Oh, no, we don't do things that way. But the way they did do things, this was peculiar, they sit us down about 2 feet apart. You look at your camera, they say to him. And they say to me, you look at your camera, this one over here. And don't look at each other. And then the next day was a MUFON conference, and they said, how was Ted? I said, I don't know. What do you mean you don't know? You were just at a program with him. I never saw him, not even on a monitor. Which is, so you're denied all those nonverbal things, people's expressions, you know, the raised eyebrow, however you want to do it. We depend on those when we're talking to people. Now, on radio, you can't do that, you know, because you can't see me, and I can't see you. But on television, you'd think there'd be some sharing of those things. And it didn't happen. And people, why do they do it that way? I suppose he may have been in Timbuktu. I don't know where he was, but I couldn't see him. I could hear him badly through a little thing in my ear.
Uh-huh.
You know. And so television does peculiar things, and I can't help it. Radio is what you hear is, you know, what I say is what you get. No tricks of the trade.
Now there's immediate accountability. Your words are your words. And that's it.
One would hope so. But
yeah. Wonder what
ufology is peculiar, I must say.
I don't know where it's going, but I know you'll be here to lead the way as we continue to roll back the darkness. It has to. This insulting cover-up, Stan, of our birthright to know what's going on has got to end soon. It can't go on.
I certainly hope so.
Yeah.
And I'll be working on that. I'll be in Roswell. I've got 9 programs coming up.
Great.
Conferences. They're on my website, www.stantonfriedman.com.
And
so you can follow me wherever you go. Come to Roswell. Enjoy the heat.
And you can shake Stan's hand.
I'll sign a book for you.
You'll do that, too. Thank you, Stan. Great to talk to you again, as always.
My pleasure.
Okay.
Take care.
Stanton Friedman, and his email address, again, is FSPHYS, right? And you can get it all on his website. Be right back.